see everybody. Happy Friday.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I guess I'll start the way I typically do and just talk about the preparation a little bit. You know, I've said often that I think the thing that you have to have in order to just give yourself a chance to have a successful draft is really good preparation. And I just want to applaud the efforts of our group again. I think we've done an outstanding job. I think the process is a lot smoother now because we've got really good communication between our coaching staff and our scouting staff. I think everybody understands what we are asking them to do in their particular roles. And that, in my opinion, has given us an excellent chance to have a great draft. And so I've been very pleased with that part of it. I do want to personally and publicly acknowledge and thank a couple of men who are going to ride out in the sunset at the end of this draft, some men who have been very, very valuable to me in my role as they have functioned in their roles. And those three gentlemen are Bobby Greer, Ed Lambert, and Bob Beers, who will all be retiring at the end of this year. So, you know, Ed Lambert's a guy who, you know, a long time ago when I was a young coach, college football coach at the AFCA convention, and I didn't know a soul. He's sitting in a hallway in the convention lobby, and I didn't know anybody. And here's an established coach who's sitting with Jim Caldwell, a bunch of guys, and he invited me to sit down. And at that point, I kind of knew that I had a chance. And so Ed's been with us, you know, obviously for a very, very long time, started with him in Denver, and just appreciate his wisdom and knowledge. And Bob Beers is another guy that was with us in Denver who's just an old – gruffy football coach who's done an outstanding job of evaluating and identifying talent for us. And then Bobby Greer. Bobby has not been in the building over the last couple of years, but, you know, I call Bobby the Oz because I would go and see him and tell Rita, if somebody's looking for me, I'm in the back at Bobby's office, and he's like the Wizard of Oz. And it's just been a valuable resource for me in the role and learning how to be a GM just his help and his perspective as it relates to just so many different things that come across my desk on a day-to-day basis. And so I just want to thank all those men and make sure that they understand and know how valuable they've been, you know, to my career. So with that, I will open it up for questions.
Well, short of asking you who you're going to draft with the first pick, what is it like now, less than a week out? You've got your board. You've done all this prep. What's this like right now for you guys?
Well, it's a good time, Mark. It's, you know, I feel really good about this board, actually. You know, like I said, the preparation, I think, has been excellent. And, you know, at this point in time, this is a little bit earlier in the process with respect to this press conference than I typically do. But the values have been set. The board is set. But that doesn't mean that there's still lots of conversation happening internally with respect to ranking and, you know, just making sure that we have all the information that we need on these guys. I feel good about this particular draft and this board in the sense that I think that there's depth throughout each round and throughout rounds 1 through 7 at most positions. And so from a strategic standpoint, that's what we'll spend the next few days doing, making sure that we know exactly how we have them ordered, make sure that we know everything about them. But I feel like this, you know, last year, for example, as it relates to strategy, I felt like the draft might fall apart a little bit in the fourth and fifth round in the sense that I didn't think that we had enough players who were rated, you know, in those rounds. And I didn't want to get to the fourth or fifth round and start to have to take players that we had rated as sixth and seventh rounders. And so strategically we looked at that and we said, okay, let's leverage those picks and let's move up in the earlier part of the draft so that we can, you know, get some players that we really feel good about. And we did that. We were able to execute that. And we moved up and took BMAC. We moved up and took Jalen. And so that's what we're doing now, Mark. We're looking at everything that we've got. We're making sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and strategizing at this point as to what we think, what we need to do to execute, you know, on draft day.
Rick, when you look at the wide receiver class, how much do you feel like, you know, it's a strong and talented one? And what do you think of just some of the people there at the top? Just, you know, generally, you know, the Will Fullers, the Corey Colemans, the Treadwells, guys, and Doxson.
Yeah, I agree with you with respect to your analysis of the group. I think it is a strong wide receiver class. I think I've said this. I said it in Indy. I think the quarterback class is a good class. I think the wide receiver class is a good class. There's some, you know, defensive end / outside linebackers. There's several positions in this draft that we think there's depth throughout. And so, you know, I tend not to to talk individually about players, but I will agree with you about that. That you know, there's some good players in this draft at that position and several.
How much better do you feel going into a draft having already bolstered your roster through free agency?
Well, I mean, I feel great about that. You know, we have said and we have adopted and I hope practiced a philosophy where we don't draft based on need, right? So, I think you've got to evaluate independently of that, and then I think you've got to have the discipline to exercise that philosophy as the draft happens. But you know, to have a football team that I really feel good about right now today, at virtually all the positions, and so to have that type of football team, I think it really gives us a chance to go and, you know, go grab some guys who can make plays with the ball in their hand or who can go make plays on the ball, who can impact the football game. And that's what we intend to do.
Wade Phillips once said that Bobby Greer was somebody who really pushed hard for JJ. He kind of credited him with that. Do you remember that discussion, and do you remember his role in JJ being selected here?
I just can't believe that's my Prince thing. That in the purple socks. No, listen, you know, there's a lot of talk about who picked JJ. We all picked JJ. JJ was a great pick. Wasn't the only great pick that we've had in that room. You know, as it relates to who had a stronger voice in any one particular pick, I don't necessarily remember that part of it. I don't even really think that that's important as much as I think it was a consensus in the room that he was a guy to take, and I'm glad we took him.
Could you talk about the significance of the 40-yard dash, and is it changed through the years as far as the importance of the 40?
I think the 40, John, it gives you the you know, we all want to know how fast a guy can run, because speed, there's one thing you can't coach, and that's speed. And so the 40-yard dash is an important element to some of the ancillary things that we use to evaluate these players. The most important thing is play speed, though, because there are guys who can run a 40-yard dash and who train for the combine, who do all those techniques and all those things that you know, all these speed coaches and places are teaching these guys to do, and they can run a fast 40, but they don't play that fast. And so there's two different speeds that we look at. We try to estimate how fast a guy plays, you know, and then we want to know how fast he can run a 40. How just straight out, how much speed does he have? But there are guys who run 4.48, who play at 4.48. That guys that run 4.3, that they don't play that fast. And so it's a part of it, but it's not the only thing.
Has it ever come up about asking players to run in uniforms?
No. I mean, and we've had a lot of conversation and talk about, you know, some of the things that we do at the combine and how we are evaluating. Some of those drills may be antiquated, and we've actually had some discussions about, you know, how to update those drills a little bit, but I don't think that it's realistic to expect that we'll have any kind of, you know, race or run that will include any kind of pads or anything like that.
Rick, in terms of the defensive line, how tough is it to find 3-4 guys, and are there a lot of them ones that can over and play that spot in terms of the 3-4 in this draft class?
I mean, there are two different, you mean nose tackles or ends?
End, mostly.
Yeah, and that's always a conversation, you know. In some respects, it's beauty is in the eye of the beholder. Sometimes you can, you know, guys that can play defensive end in a 4-3 or play defensive end in our system, or are you projecting that guy to be an outside linebacker in our system? If he's an outside linebacker, is he a guy that can be a pass rusher on third down? Maybe he can go put his hand down. So there's a lot of versatility in a lot of those players, and a lot of it just depends on, you know, what you're going to ask a guy to do. And that's one of the things that I really feel good about our process at this point is we've got really specific ideas as to what these guys will do when they come into our building and into our scheme, and that comes from a lot of conversation and a lot of emphasis on making sure that as we evaluate from a scouting perspective and a coaching perspective that we use, is that you, Mark? That's a fine, man. That wasn't you. That we use, yeah. That you're right. Touche. I owe you. That we make sure that we're specific about what the guy's going to do when he comes into our building. And so I think that gives us a chance to really, you know, take players and be real, you know, clear about what they're going to do when they walk in the door.
Right.
They're multiplistic in use. I mean, some of them are guys that weren't combine guys that we don't have any real medical data and information on, and we want to get our doctors to put their hands on the guys. And so if we've got draftable grades on some of those guys, we'll bring them in and make sure that we get the medical piece covered, you know, just that we're being thorough that way. Some of them are recruiting visits for guys that we don't think are going to be drafted that we're talking to, and we're saying, hey, look, this is what we see for you, and if we take you, then here's what you're going to do, and if not, then you know, maybe we can compete for a free agent opportunity. And then some of them are just, you know, you need additional information. So we've had, you know, multiple opportunities to talk to these players, to whether it's at All-Star games and interviews or at the combine or you know, scouts going on campus and talking to them. Sometimes you don't get enough, and you need to bring them in, and you need to just, you know, I've said a lot. I describe this process as exhaustive because it has to be, because it's so important, and you've got to make sure that you leave no stone unturned with respect to your preparation so that on draft day you know what you're getting and there are no questions that you need to ask, you know, while you're sitting there on the clock.
So, Rick, a part of this exhausting process, where does pro day fit in?
Not exhausting, Mark. It's exhaustive.
No, I got exhaustive. Exhaustive. How important is the
I owe him, so I'm going to get him now.
Exhaustive.
How exhausting is the process?
Exhausting. No, how important is pro day for everything, amongst the things that you do?
Yeah, again, another important, I'll say ancillary, you know, data point that we use in the whole process, but a very important one, just like the combine is very important. But the bulk of the evaluation, Mark, happens when you turn the film on and you watch the guy and what kind of football player he is. And that's the most important thing. And we harp on that the, you know, the playing personality and the resume that the guy puts on film is by far the most important thing that we look at. But then you've got to look at 40 time, you've got to look at the medical piece, and you've got to look at what he does at the pro day, and do you see progression? I'm big on careers. I like guys that have, you know, that have had careers. And so do you see the guy continuing to improve, whether it's you saw the kid at an All-Star game, and I don't like to call him kid, but you saw the young man at an All-Star game, you know, then you saw him obviously in his, you know, first in the season and at an All-Star game, and then you saw him at the combine and you see him at the pro day, do you see progression? You know, is he continuing to get better? Because, you know, I tell these guys all the time when they come in for the visits, one of the things that I talk to them about is it's an interesting time in their lives where most times you don't get to the level of success that these guys have gotten to if they're not goal-oriented. And so the fact that they're goal-oriented, one of the problems with that, and me included, is goal-oriented people are very ambitious, they're very driven, and so when they – set a goal and they reach the goal, what do? They set another goal, right? So, you know, there are not a lot of times in your life where you get to really be in some real gratitude and thankful for, you know, all the work that you've done and what's about to happen for them. So I talk to them about that perspective. But then I also remind them that as soon as this draft is over, the next week there's a rookie mini camp and they go right back to the bottom and the grind starts again. So, you know, you want to make sure that you see progression through the course of the spring, so that when the guy shows up at rookie minicamp, he is what you think he is.
What do you consider a good batting average for a draft, and how long does it take to really know whether or not you had a good draft?
Yeah, I kind of let you guys do the batting average kind of success thing. I think it takes about 2 to 3 years. You know, there's some guys that you know, when you take a guy in the first round, the expectation is there, especially when you're in the upper half of the first round, there's some impact that you want, right? And then as you move through the balance of the draft, we have defined, you know, one of the ways that we define how you take a guy, where you grade a guy on a grading scale, is what you think his success rate's going to be in the league. So if you take a guy in the first round, if that upper half, you expect him to make an impact. If it's the back half, you know, pretty quickly, right? The back half, you expect that he'll be an impact player and a starter. And then the second round, you're thinking about a starter. And third round, you think, you know, so there are descriptions that we use. So for the entire draft, I think it takes some time, 2-3 years to see. But there are some guys that you want to see some immediate impact on. And so I think that's it's a complicated question, but it varies from where you take the guy, I think, you know.
Rick, what does it say about Art Briles and Baylor that they're supposed to have the most players drafted from any of Texas schools?
Boy, he loves Baylor, doesn't he?
I would ask you about Purdue, but I don't know if they're going to have anybody drafted.
Wow. You, boy, Marvin. It's the Mark and John show on Rick today. Here's what I would say. As important as this process is, John, for us, equally important for college football is the recruiting process. It is the lifeblood of college football. And so what it says to me is clearly Arch and his staff, they're doing a great job of recruiting and developing players. And so, you know, he's a heck of a football coach, and they've got a great program, great facilities. And, you know, we had a big presence at their pro day. And you're right, they've got a lot of good football players. And I think that will continue because I think he's an excellent recruiter. And I think they do a good job of developing players.
Rick, in recent years, the Texans haven't had seventh round picks. Has this been a strategy to get after those undrafted kids early with the success you've had with Arian Foster and other undrafted prospects?
Yeah, I don't know if that was by design as much as it's just a function of movement, right? So we have 2 6-round picks this year, but you're right, we don't have a seven. And that was just a function of making some moves during the course of the year to try to get our football team better. So it's not by design that we don't have them. If we had a seventh pick or multiple seventh round picks, it wouldn't, you know, affect how aggressive and how organized and how important that college free agency process is. It's hugely important because, as you know, we've talked about the fact that, you know, in the salary cap era, you have to have the draft and you know, college free agents round out your roster, and you want good football players. And so we put a lot of emphasis on that. We put a lot of time and effort on that. You know, that's that part of the process, really. John Carr, Chris Olsen, and you know, those guys. You know, the big stuff were Brian Gain and myself and the coaches. You know, we're doing a lot of the front, the top of the board. But that free agency process, that those, and those guys do a lot of work, and they get with the coaches, and we have, you know, we've got a pretty detailed process that we use to pair coaches and scouts together, and you know, that's organized. And so it has to be, because, you know, if you can hit on one or two of those guys, and we did last year, that's really, really, you know, it's impactful for your team.
One of the things you guys were able to do recently was to get a fifth-year option exercise for DeAndre Hopkins. How important is that toward the future, and just kind of your thoughts on, you know, making sure that he's here for a long time?
Yeah, D-Hop is really, really emerging into, you know, one of the better wide receivers in the league. And you're right, we exercise the option. So this isn't his last year. He's got another year on his contract. And I just think that, you know, when you look at the way we built our football team, and you know, it starts with the draft, obviously, but we want to keep those players. And I think we've done a decent job of doing that. So he certainly is one of those guys that we're going to keep around there for a long time, hopefully. So, you know, he's working hard.
Why did you waive Hoyer when you did, rather than keep him around later, see if you get a pick?
Well, I think I probably could have gotten a pick, John, you know, honestly. But I think, in fairness to him, you know, we just thought, you know, and this was an organizational decision. Everything that we do and when we do it, we have, you know, multiple conversations about it. And, you know, while there may have been some value there for us organizationally, we just, you know, felt like it was the right time to do it. And that, not just for him, but for us as well. So it was just the right time, we felt, organizationally. And so we made the move.
How much do you enjoy when you have that local day where you bring all the guys that played or connected to Houston, you bring them in here, a lot of guys – that maybe you wouldn't see normally, perhaps. What do you think about that day?
Yeah, that's a huge, huge thing for us. We've got, you know, so many, you know, good football players here that have some local tie, and it's, you know, we've had some success finding guys in that, you know, particular workout setting. And so I think they enjoy it. We enjoy it. You know, it's a time for us coaches to get out on the grass again and kind of work with in the somewhat team like setting. We organize it that way. So that's fun. I enjoy watching that and just enjoy, you know, getting to know the young athletes from around here.
Rick, there's several top-of-the-draft class players that have some medical issues. With Jadeveon Clowney and his injury history, does that factor into some of the players you may or may not look at?
No. I mean, everything is individual. You know, we've got an outstanding medical staff. Our doctors, you know, and trainers do a great job of identifying, you know, and grading the players and giving that information to us. And so we've got good information and good feelings on all the guys and their medical grades. We'll take some guys off the board. We'll understand the risk of some other guys. And so, no, nothing that we've done before impacts that.
Rick, is it hard sometimes not to be careful about putting too much emphasis on speed, especially when everybody loves speed?
Is it careful?
About speed, sometimes to say compartmentalize it, make it part of the process instead of a big reason you took somebody.
Well, I mean, it's like I said, you can't coach it, but if a guy can run fast but he can't play football, John, it doesn't make sense to have him on your football team. You know what I mean? And there is some benefit to speed, and certainly you want guys who can play ball and play fast and you know, all those things. But you're right, you can't overvalue one particular characteristic, whether that is size, weight, speed, whatever. You can't overvalue it. And so speed is the same thing. I mean, there's some things that you can get away with if you can run. But you've also got to be able to change the direction. You've got to be able to think. You've got to be able to do all those other things that encompass a good football player. Okay? All right. Thanks. Yeah, I was thinking about that yesterday. I think, I don't know. I got so many. I would tell you the whole Purple Rain album I liked. That's where I got the purple socks on for Princeton.
Just one quick question. With the you said normally it takes 2 years for a draft to really weigh whether you know, evaluate how good it was. But that being said, last year's draft, a lot of those guys contributed early. Do you think that was one of your better draft classes in recent years?
Yeah, I don't know if it was one of the better ones. What I will tell you is I think it's indicative of what we described a little bit earlier, in the sense that I think what we're doing at this point in the process is so good from the standpoint of evaluating what the guy's role and vision is for our team. So, for example, I'll give you a guy, Keith Mumphrey. You know, I think we even took some criticism because nobody really knew about Keith. We were the only team to go in and work him out, but we had a specific vision for what he could do for our team, and he came in and he fulfilled that role. So that, to me, is why you look at, you know, our last couple of drafts, what we've been able to do is really hone in on these guys and really, you know, have a clear vision of what they will do when they walk in, and so they have a chance to play early, you know.